Welcome to the annual Sundance Intercut Awards here on the channel, where we are discussing all of the good in movies. Honestly, there was some TV. We got some shorts, all of the good stuff that have come
all
out this year.
All of it's entertainment.
It is some of the most beautiful things that we're going to be talking about a year from now. And we are here breaking everything down in our annual Sundance Awards. We have recorded our top 10.
Yes.
We have recorded individual reviews.
Yes.
We recorded everything but hours of sleep.
Yeah.
So we pretty much have everything. I'm your co-host, Arturo Zurita. Joined as always, I am here with Amanda and Zach, who have been watching over 50 movies here at the fest to break down everything you need to know. How's it been for you guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not holding my microphone. Where's my microphone?
Uh-oh. It's been an interesting Sundance.
That's
for sure.
How long
you can
it's
see.
Been.
That's how
yeah,
long
it's
been.
Long. We are on the last day of movies here. Yeah. We are going to wrap up this live stream at some point and go catch our last person in person screening.
Bro, like we're covering movies to cover more movies.
Yeah,
just because we have so much. This has been a year of really good performances, really good scripts, really good just screening and just festival vibes in general. And that's where we're going to start it off right off the bat, going into the supporting actors of this year, because this has been a year that has had some really good performances, either in A Different Man that had some really interesting stuff from Adam Pearson, who we have been arguing on where we would have placed him. We have been arguing about the new Sundance Queen. I think it's Dolly De Leon because she's been in multiple projects this year. And then we've even had a couple of other good ones that we're going to be mentioning in the up and coming. But I think for this year's supporting actors, we have our top five with Chiwetel Ejiofor in a little movie called Raw Peace that this man also produced. And he's starring in a really good supported role. Oh, and he directed, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to see a lot of multi-hyphenates coming into the fest, and he clearly got a spot right there at number five.
Yeah, I mean, I think his performance is one of the things that does really stand out about the movie, because he's really, like, it's a very felt performance.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch that movie and not see the anguish he's going through and feel that performance. To me, like, it's a movie that didn't stand out that much to me, but his performance is one of the things that
did.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's really good. Another one, we were talking how personal it gets for a lot of people. Actually, no, this is a little different. I'm confusing the Chris's here. Chris Sullivan, character actor who's been in a lot of really big stuff, some smaller stuff. He came in for a movie called Presence and knocked it out of the park when it comes to the family members who were dealing with some crazy stuff.
He says the line. The line that tied it together for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And just kind of the dad we all hope we could be.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one that you might not expect based on him. He's this big kind of hulking man. Mm-hmm. But he's so sensitive. Yeah.
Shout out Lucy Liu. I thought you were great. People didn't
like.
She was
great.
Like purposefully a problem in
the
movie.
She was purposely a problem, but it was like so much.
But he was the heart of the family. Without him,
yeah.
You don't
There's
get
nothing,
the movie.
Yeah.
We had another performance that some people were split on, but even if the voice grades you a little bit, Carol Kane, Zach, talk about why she was incredible in Between the Temples.
I mean, I think Between the Temples allows her to kind of be all the interesting aspects of herself, because she's a little bit kooky. She's a little bit like aggressive in certain situations, but she's also just very funny. And I think it's just such an interesting performance from her that allows her to be dramatic and allows her to be hilarious and uses all of her great aspects as an iconic actor.
There's a crazy scene, a dinner scene, and just the fact that everyone's imploding and she goes, tea for time out. The way she just handles things is great. But then we have our top two from A Different Man, a movie that we did not think would get her an award, but scooped up something where we didn't even know she spoke English just fluently, mm-hmm. much less was able to control it. I'm going to let you say it.
I think it's Renate Reinsf. I think.
Reinsf?
Reinsf?
So where we did the Australian thing, when I say Renata, you say...
Renata. I think it's Renata, but it's like the... Reinsf? I'm not
yeah.
sure.
Something I'm going to call her the Norwegian actress from The Worst Person in the World.
Yeah.
Who played Ingrid in A Different Man. She was great in Handling the Undead.
Yes.
Or I should say good, because we were really anticipating that one. She's not bad in it.
I think she's really good for what she was given to work with.
Yeah, those movies' problems are not hers.
But it's the supporting role here as Ingrid, where she really is like the root of the movie, what's happening with our lead actor, and then how she ends up finding another actor and putting this play together. And just what her character doesn't know is what really makes the story. So in our number two spot, Renate Reinsf. Hopefully I'm saying that perfectly.
I think.
Correctly.
Yeah. No, she does a really good job sort of balancing between being this like alluring figure and then ultimately like a foil. And
yeah.
She's just a little unpredictable.
Did you get a little bit of Emma Stone in The Curse?
I can hear that.
Where she kind of wants to like do this profound play, but in reality,
it's my character.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Yeah,
she never admitted.
And her sort of like ethical grandstanding at certain points. Yeah.
Well, what you think she's doing? Bet number one here for best supporting actress needs to come from a role that's in the movie Exhibiting Forgiveness, a movie that really stood out to me. So I'm championing this one in the awards. Anjanue Ellis. She may have not gotten something for her leading role, which you would argue for in Origin from last year, but here I think she gives the biggest performance in the movie when it comes to our main character doing what the title says, which is exhibiting forgiveness. And it's a big through line in this movie where you may want to forgive the person who did something wrong, but many times you're busy blaming the other people who allowed it, not even the perpetrator. You're almost just as mad as the people who allowed it to happen. So for me, Anjanue Ellis-Taylor is the best performance from Sundance 2024. Moving on to some of the other categories. These are some of the best supporting, but Zach's going to take it away with what we consider the up-and-comers from Sundance.
Yeah.
We have a good track record.
We do. I mean, look, this is one of the things that's exciting about being at a film festival in general, but especially one like Sundance, which debuts so many new films from new filmmakers and stuff like that, is that you get a lot of discoveries. You get either actors who just haven't been in anything before and are suddenly like beloved, or you get actors who maybe had smaller parts in a bunch of different things and then they're given the big stage finally at the Sundance Film Festival. So among our choices for up-and-comers from this year's Sundance, we got to go back to Exhibiting Forgiveness and Ian Foreman, who's another one of the actors who appeared in two
little
movies
tiny roles
at Sundance. Yeah, he's in both. Great.
He's a young Andre Holland in Exhibiting Forgiveness and then a young Justice Smith in I Saw the
so,
TV Globe.
So he's the junior.
He gets the Sophia Lillis Award.
Yes, exactly. To our better performances of the year.
Exactly. But yeah, just an actor who showed up in a couple great movies, so hopefully a lot more to come from him. Lily Collyus, I know, stood out to you a lot for her work in Good Women.
She got that one scene.
The whole film kind of rests on her face.
That one scene, yeah.
So it's a performance that you have to be able to do a lot of, subtle acting, face acting and stuff like that to carry it. And she certainly stands out in that role. Preeti Panigahi.
From the World Dramatics.
Yes, from the film Girls Will Be Girls, which we just watched this morning. It's a last-minute addition for us, but really, really holds her own. And I think, you know, so much of the drama is in watching her trying to navigate these situations. That she's really, really incredible in it.
Also won an award at Sundance. I think they gave her a special jury one. So
okay, nice. There we go.
Cool.
Shout out to her.
So yeah, the Sundance jury agrees with us.
Our top two.
Yeah, let's talk about Isaac Wong from Didi, the coming of age film that we think we all really, really loved.
Yeah.
And you know, the coming of age movie rests on that main performance.
It does.
You wanting to stick with him and her empathizing or relating to it. And, you know, I think he's able to embody all the awkwardness of that adolescent period. The eagerness combined with being nervous as well, and you know, you never. He's never too much of anything. He just feels like a collection of all the emotions you're going through.
Authentic.
Very authentic in the role, for
you
sure.
You got to give him credit, too, because what does this kid know about the 2000s?
Yeah.
Right?
Right? Like, that's the one thing
that's
I'm
the one
like,
thing he said in the interview. He was like, honestly, you think, and it's like really not that different. At the end of the day, it's like, all teenagers are teenagers, you know? Like,
he was saying the biggest difference is that he had to hit a button 3 times to type L on the phone.
Yeah, that's, you know, and the struggles, man.
The range this boy has. He is the future. He did really good there. But our number one.
Yeah, we went with Maisie Stella from My Old Ass, somebody who, as far as we know, hasn't been in a feature film before this.
Like TV, some music, but...
Absolutely just held the stage in My Old Ass. She just pops off the screen. She's so fun and silly and free. And I think it's just the kind of performance that has so much like personality and attitude towards it that you feel like you know the character within an instant.
Absolutely.
And really helpful for a movie like this. So yeah, Maisie Stella, definitely a lot more to look out for her.
Easily. I know you guys like the kids from Presence.
I thought
they were kind of decent. Yeah. I like the kids from In the Summer as well. But Maisie Stella, I think she's going to have a future. When you have Aubrey Plaza under the wing, you're going to be good. So those are our inner cut up-and-comers. Let us know what your favorites were down below or in the live chat as we wrap our third category over here, which is everything when it comes to a movie. We're not hearing these. We're not smelling them. We're seeing them. And we had some of the best cinematography of the year. Amanda, take it away.
So it was a pretty stacked category. We had a hard time limiting it down. You know, even things like Sasquatch Sunset, Exhibiting Forgiveness, Different Man, Outrun, while not the strongest movie, still good. But
it looked nice, yeah.
We got it down to a top five. It was a little bit of a fight, but we got there. So in the fifth position, we went with Love Lies Bleeding. This was definitely one of the ones I was fighting for, but I do think it has a very distinct vibe and look, and it nails the fact that it feels like it's from that like 80s turning into the 90s. So I think that it's amazingly shot. They do some really cool stuff with red lighting. Big fan of that.
I argued that it was like a Coen Brothers movie.
It looks like
it's gritty.
My comparisons were more to like David Cronenberg or Nick Reffin, but the you know just
oh, that's fair.
Bringing,
yeah. That's fair.
Bringing yeah. up all of those filmmakers, like they're all filmmakers who bring a certain level of visual panache to their film. So like it's obviously in a class.
It's in a class.
Yeah,
and it's very should be celebrated. Yeah, I like it a lot. Then there's one that didn't quite hit as hard for me as a movie, but there's no denying the cinematography of In a Violent Nature.
Yeah.
We were talking about it earlier about how you're expecting camera to start getting obstructed by twigs or random branches or grass, but they had that mapped out perfectly. It wasn't just like just walk randomly and aimlessly. They had it mapped. It is beautiful. It's shot super well. Just certain the camera angles that you get behind people's heads or when somebody's listening, it both feels voyeuristic and not at the same time. It's very well done. Very there's no denying it.
Then kill of the year.
Kill of the year, for sure. It's simultaneously almost like a nature documentary and a slasher.
Exactly.
And getting both and getting them both effectively
is hard good and good, yeah. Then in third, this is one that we all really loved. It's What's Inside, and that's Kevin Fletcher did that one. It's just so cool. Just the way that it's shot, just like there's like the Brady Bunch scene, all the different colors that are being used, not just to have cool colors, but are directly impactful to the plot itself.
Narratively.
It's very cool. It just has a very... It's a distinct vibe that maybe you could compare to something like a Bodies, 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 but it's actually using those vibes for the movie itself. So very, very cool.
What did it for us was that car scene at the beginning when they're driving.
Dude.
And they do a tilt and we went, okay.
Yeah, I saw the tilt. I think in my note, it's like tilt. I was like, let's go. They did it.
There's a lot of new people here too, especially this next guy.
Yeah, brand new guy.
Up and comers.
Brand new guy. Steven Soderbergh.
He shoots too many of his movies.
Wow,
damn.
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh actually shot Presence, and it is a movie that the premise itself is very cool, but the premise is really baked into the cinematography itself. It is how it is shot. That is such a cool part of the movie.
Totally. And one of the things that's fun, especially knowing that it is a Steven Soderbergh movie and he likes to be the cam op on a lot of his movies, is just imagining Soderbergh running around that house.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very, very cool voyeuristic. Yeah, it's a very cool voyeuristic thing, but luckily they put it on a very steady cam, so it doesn't feel like you're just like, but very good. So it had to be in cinematography because, again, so much of what that makes that movie
for sure
is the cinematography. But we had to give it to I Saw the TV Glow. Eric Huey.
Bruh, last year already stole it with the 1001.
Yeah.
When we heard about how they did that scene in New York running through the arrows, and they're like, yeah,
which
it was just
street?
A cameraman running down the same street.
So good.
Magic here.
It's magic. So much of this just pops in so many exciting and fun ways that I'm sure is a collaborative effort between Eric and Jane, but you can't deny that just that tracking shot through the hallway of the school, just so many very distinct moments in the visuals of this movie. So we had to give it the best cinematography award of the year.
One of the few films here where you see it and you feel like it instantly looks iconic.
Yes.
We all have a shot. Yeah. Mine is... The TV one?
TV's great. TV is great.
The hallway one's sick, though.
The hallway one's sick. It's good vibes.
When the music hits.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Text,
it's just, and it hits in.
Give us a third, Zach.
Ice Cream Man.
Like, there's so many, bro.
Yeah.
I saw the TV Glow. Best.
Ice Cream Man 1 or 2.
Probably one.
It has to be one. Too
yeah.
funny, but it's got to be one. Looking at this right here, that is our first section of our Intercut Awards. We're very curious to know what y'all are thinking in the comment section. We see that there's a bunch of people mentioning different ones, especially as they're watching at home, which I think is really awesome. I know people are really excited for Didi. Mm-hmm. People are loving Daughters, which is another one that we're going to have in a category coming up. But as we get to the midway point, any thoughts y'all want to add before I hit you with the Cineclash Sundance trivia that I got for these two right here? As I set that up, let me know your thoughts so far on any other categories, any other stuff dealing with Sundance.
Ooh, I mean, you know, we didn't talk at all yet about the actual Sundance Awards that they gave out because, you know, sometimes they feel like the appropriate choice and then sometimes they are a little bit confusing.
Yes.
This wasn't the most confusing set of awards that we've seen, but there were some that we were a little surprised by.
Yeah.
Obviously, Daughters being the big one of the festival makes a lot of sense because that is a powerful, powerful movie.
Yes,
a really well-executed documentary that we're going to talk about a little bit later. In the Summers, picking up the award for U.S. Grand Jury. I think we all like the film.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
A little bit more than the two of us.
I was looking forward to the
big
cast.
Fan,
I got to be there for the premiere. If I didn't post that, they might have not won. So
that's
like,
true.
You know,
that's true.
Shout
man.
Out them, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an effective movie about, you know, these young women who it kind of jumps through time as they grow up with their dad and sort of seeing the evolution and how their dad acts and maybe having developing bits of like jealousy over how they were treated. I don't know. It's very, very, very interesting film. Not the film that when I saw it, or at least saw some of the other ones, I was expecting for the prize, because we were expecting it to go to maybe a DD or a Real Pain or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised a Real Pain didn't pick it up, honestly.
Yeah, it did pick up the Screenwriting Award.
It did, yeah. So, deserved.
Which we will talk more about what we think in terms of the Screenwriting Awards in just a little bit.
Right next.
Yeah, but first, we have some trivia?
I got some trivia for y'all. This next one's going to be pretty simple. I got a couple of rounds. It's going to be all stills. I'm going to show you a very simple still from the movie. Viewers at home can already see it from the top. The first to mention it gets it. Name me. You already know it.
I do. That's 10 Lives.
No.
No, 10 Lives is animated. That's,
no. What's the other? It's the other kid's one, isn't it?
No.
It's, no, I know what it is, but I can't.
Three.
Remember. I can't remember. Two. I just know. I know that still. I guess.
You know, it's out of your mind. It was so
out of your
close.
Mind. Okay, good.
Out of my mind, I think. I don't even
I didn't watch it.
There's just two family movies. Yeah, Out of My Mind, that would have been this one right here. I heard a lot of people say that they enjoyed it. None of us saw it. But we did see this next one over here. Three, two.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Don't Count, I guess. You got you with that one right there. All right. I'm gonna do it completely around and then hit you with this next one. A still from a movie that premiered at this Sundance. I'm going to have y'all close your eyes real quick. Three, two, one.
Sasquatch, your monster.
I don't know what the first one was, but it is your monster. It's a Sasquatch.
I knew it was your monster, but my brain went like...
You see a man covered in that much like excess hair and grime, and you assume he's a Sasquatch.
Yeah,
but in fact, he's
like,
a monster.
Sasquatch monster. Yeah.
Big difference between Sasquatches ridiculous. And monsters.
I can't believe this is live. I apologize to those watching at home. All right, last one.
Okay, yeah. Close right, your eyes again. Okay.
It's 2-0, but it's okay. We got a couple of rounds.
Sure, sure.
3, 2, 1.
That is the greatest night in the history of pop.
There you go, sir.
Thank you.
There you go, sir.
Thank you. That is coming to Netflix not so long from now.
Chill. You can get a Netflix subscription. No,
Do we want to name all the actors who showed up in two movies at Sundance this year? Because that we'd like to point out the...
You will be.
Oh,
you're in the second round.
I didn't realize you had multiple rounds.
Honestly,
Okay. Honestly,
the actors, I don't even think were as much as some of the like repeating themes or turns of phrases and posters. Ooh. And
no, actually, the winner is... I won't even spoil it because someone has it as a special category. So let's actually get into those. Before we get into the documentary, screenplays, and shorts, we have what Sundance likes to do, the special jury prizes. And here we have some specialer prizes. I'm going to start off with the special jury prize in stunts. It goes to none other than the... I would call her the female Tom Cruise. Thelma. She did her own stunts.
She did
her own explosions. June Squibb, at the prime age of 90-something years old, came in.
Car stunts? Scooter stunts?
Yeah, but the real thing is the flip over the mattress.
I thought
it was the flip until she pulled that Glock out, and I was like, whoa.
Whoa, I know. I don't know, man. Like the chicken with the go-karts? Not the go-karts, but the scooter?
Yeah.
Commitment?
That scooter was crazy.
Yeah.
My second special jury award has to go to the best after show, and that would have been all of the Howling. How's it pronounced?
Ooh-wee!
And they claim they hate the movie. So Sasquatch Sunset had us coming out.
I hate it less than you did.
Yeah, but you're hating it in the other categories I'm watching it. I think this has some of the best performances because of the... I can't even do it.
Yeah, I can.
The whooping?
Woo!
It's difficult, but we had people coming out of the screen like we were coming out of a concert. It felt like we left an astral world
it's
over
true.
Here.
It's true.
So those would be my special jury prizes for what made Sundance for me.
Oh, do you have your special jury
prize? Yeah, I'm going to go with the best theater crowd reaction and just in general. And I think it is just a bunch of the screenings at the library, because I've heard similar things about other movies, but Your Monster just had the most engagement of a crowd that I have been in. There was definitely some other ones where they're screaming in certain moments, reactions to certain moments. No, the Your Monster crowd, they were in for the whole thing. Like, she does something they don't like, they're booing. They do something she likes, they're cheering. It was a very exciting experience to be a part of.
It really does seem like it was the library theater. It was something in the air, something in the water. Because I was there for the world premiere of In a Violent Nature, and that was a rowdy crowd.
Yeah. Midnight's always going to be rowdy, but
like lots of like applause during the kills. And even doing the TIFF thing, the R for the piracy warning before.
We need more of that at Sundance. Yeah, I know this is supposed to be more prestigious.
No, but we need a little bit more crowd work, a little more or audience participation.
What makes it memorable.
Yeah, exactly.
You all didn't like Hi Sundance?
I didn't hear enough people doing it.
That
was just
by
us.
Accident. That was just like,
it's the third year in the row. Like, I don't know. Get a new one. Bring Awkwafina back.
So another special jury prize that I wanted to give out is the best New Jersey movie, because a weird thing.
There's a lot of New Jersey movies.
You walked out yesterday to go to the bathroom, and the last thing that came up was like, if I see this New Jersey film logo icon one more time.
Yeah. A lot of movies, even if they weren't necessarily set in New Jersey, were filmed in New Jersey this year.
Too many.
And, you know, a couple shout outs to Fort Lee, New Jersey, where I'm from too.
We were watching a movie and Zach goes, that's where I live.
Willard Harper. They show my building.
I was going to say what movie, but
oh my God.
There's a lot of buildings in Willard Harper. Don't worry. But anyway, so if we're going for what takes the crown for the best New Jersey movie, I mean, part of me wants to go with Rob Peace because that film feels so like integral to the communities in East Orange and seeing the passage of time and how it affects the communities and stuff like that. I think I responded a little bit more though to Pony Boy.
Okay.
Which is
Yeah.
I mean, it's set, you know.
Was it the ratchetness?
Exactly, right? I'm just a ratchet person. But
the movie?
I think they take a little bit more Jersey pride in that movie, too. They're constantly talking about
I'm a Jersey girl at heart. I can't leave Jersey.
That is a quote of the movie.
Caitlin wants us all to just be generally closer to the mic. I don't know how the sound is coming through live, but hopefully you can hear us.
You ever seen how...
Also, always our audio ends up getting recorded and put out. And
you ever see how Elvis does it?
Just trying to... Either
I'm not going
to
show it to you, but I don't know if you know.
I don't know. I feel like...
Yeah, there was too many Jersey stuff. I think I counted maybe double digits in Jersey movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but last time I was with you, we drove by, bro. Y'all like the original Hollywood. You have like the museum of the first camera.
Exactly.
So it makes sense.
Ooh. The first movie studios were built in Fort Lee, New Jersey, not in California.
Well, how did you lose them?
Texas.
And then we did have just like our regular tech awards here. So just some simple ones here in terms of music and sound, kind of combining them all. Y'all really resonated with that Kneecap OST particular because it is the main actors who are also the freaking band.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, they have the actors from the actual group Kneecap are playing sort of themselves, I guess we can say.
Pretty much themselves.
And it also does the John Carney thing in that it sort of shows them making the songs and they perform it as they're making them, which is just, it's an easy way to kind of like get you hooked
pumped
on the song.
Yeah, exactly.
Like behind the characters. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. But then there was movies that we're awarding and they didn't even have music, barely any sound, and yet we're really effective. Mm-hmm. In a Violent Nature impresses not only with its cinematography, but there are just kills that without the sound, they're nothing. Like you could probably listen to the sound without the kill and it'll still be like a top one as well.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to give this, what is it? Number four pick to In a Violent Nature for its soundscape. But soundscape, music, and score. Ooh. Honestly, it should be number one, but we're goofballs who have something else really at the top. Alex G came in for I Saw the TV Glow and has probably been the most anticipated thing that the inner cuties have been wanting to see. We were told, can you just turn on the Google Hangout? I just want to hear the score.
It's so good.
Let me tell you. This is the best soundscape to come out of it.
Oh, yeah.
It is literally a movie designed to just listen to. They already have an original soundtrack for the entire thing because you know the story.
Yeah, basically, Jane used a portion. So the director used a portion of the budget just to commission songs by their favorite artist and then just use so many of them in the movies for these. Maybe what feels a little gratuitous overusage in the movie for transition scenes, but
it's
I don't know.
Flex.
I like it. It works and it's a great flex and it's memorable. So we'll give it. But then even just the overall sound is just fantastic.
Phoebe Bridges and everybody in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 100% one of the standout things. Definitely makes the movie. It should be number one.
Yeah, it should be. But we'll let you have. We'll let you have.
Zach and I really, really resonated with this little song from Will and Harper that plays during the credits.
Yeah.
We were discussing how it also comes from a junior writer.
From Michael Keaton's son.
Michael Keaton's son. He wrote a bop.
Yeah.
We can also say who the comedian is, right?
I mean, it's Wheeler, but if you want to just say... Yeah, it's a great SNL cast
member. It's not that hard to connect, especially when you see what the director has done before.
Somebody who's done a lot of stuff
movies.
With Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
SNL alum.
Maybe at award shows recently.
When I saw them, I was like, of course this works. Like, yeah. I'm like, they're at the award shows together all the time. That Will and Harper song is beautiful. We hope it makes it all the way until next year because it really does have a lot of heart in it. and a beautiful jazz section as well. But really, shout out Alex G. That was a fantastic score that he did. And that's the music and sound category. Zach, take it away with your favorite category.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about best makeup and hairstyling and costumes, just generally the aspects of production that we want to highlight from some of these films. Because makeup in particular, I think, was a big factor in a lot of these Sundance movies and a lot of what made them special. We wanted to shout out Stress Positions, which may not seem like it at first, but, you know, John Early
he looked disgusting,
covered in flop sweat. The makeup that they wear as well to kind of look glammed out and stuff. I think it's a movie that could be easily overlooked for not necessarily having, you know, outstanding technical aspects, but I think the makeup does really accentuate what's going on in that film.
You gave a good point. You even pulled up with the script. You were like, in the script it says.
Exactly. Another one that we wanted to shout out is Handling the Undead.
Creepy.
Which, you know, I mean, anytime you're dealing with some kind of zombification, you want to have a solid makeup team, but it's the detail in how they executed some of it that I think stood out.
I agree. Like, you can look at somebody and be like, oh, they've been lying on their back, so the blood in their body is pooled to their back. Mm. And it's just like subtle little details like that. The way their eyes look, like, it was actually very unsettling, even though like zombies are so often already gruesome. It was so unsettling.
Plus, they were like super stiff, looked like us at the actual waiting outside in the overflow.
Yeah.
Yeah, handling was, it got that department done right, for sure.
What's my next one?
In a
Violent Nature, of course. I mean, any horror film that is going to feature gruesome deaths, I think you needs to, the makeup can't take you out of it. And this is some of the most gruesome stuff that we've seen.
There's only one way to put those body parts where those body parts are.
Outstanding work. As we've talked about before, easily the nastiest kill that I've seen in Sundance. A Different Man, which it has to be mentioned here, not just because makeup is kind of like integral to how the story is told, but like in order to do what they do and almost like trick us into believing one actor is a different actor, it's got to be absolutely convincing. You can't doubt it for a second. And yeah, I mean, to transform Sebastian Stan into this man who has all these facial deformities and these tumors growing on his face, I think it's really incredible work.
Works for the story and everything, yeah.
Absolutely. But the thing, I think the makeup that stood out the most to us for the fest is Sasquatch.
Nope.
It's kind of there. You went the reverse way with the sound.
I went the other way, right?
Yeah. Sasquatch Sunset. I mean, they transformed Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg into a pair of Sasquatches that are so convincing that it was kind of hard to know which one's Riley Keough and which one's Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse, I can tell by the eyes.
Yeah, I mean,
Jesse, I can tell by the eyes because he had these. There was something. First of all, one of them, the voice was too deep for Jesse. One of them was too small for Jesse. Yeah. So by process of elimination, but I'd be like, the eyes. I'm like, that's Jesse Eisenberg. But see,
I swear to you, they're Sasquatch.
And then I would forget which one's which.
That's fair.
Because they look like Sasquatches.
I'm saying they all look like Geico, like ads.
Yeah,
like
the only one that really looked different a lot was the smaller one.
The smaller one,
yeah.
And I was sure that one wasn't Jesse for a little bit, and then I wasn't sure.
Yeah, because then you're like, maybe they're doing something to make him look shorter.
But like this is a movie that you can watch the entirety of and not know.
No.
Maybe you'll figure it out, but you might not, which goes a long way to say how good the actor
is. Yeah, Riley was process of elimination only.
Yeah.
And even then, it was like, well, maybe they made Riley the short one.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe
know.
It's
like,
Jesse.
When you told me the director was one of them, I was like...
Yeah, the director was a big boy. Big boy.
Funny stuff. But yeah, no, that's a good wrap up for the makeup, hairstyling, and even some little costumes in there. But Amanda is very adamant on who the best ensembles was, and argued for this number one spot.
I did have an argument. Just to mention a runner up, I'm going to mention Freaky Tales. I know you guys haven't had a chance to catch it yet. You're about to, but it is really just really solid performances around.
Probably we'll tweet if we disagree with her.
Yeah,
but this had this
retraction.
Like, everyone was here for Pedro.
Yeah, Pedro.
You know, they were lying for Ben Mendelsohn. Jay Ellis, Jack Champion.
All the red carpet photographers were ready for Normani.
They were out there for Normani.
So it was that one you had to mention at least.
For sure.
But we decided to give our top five a little different. We went with Ghostlight just because it was a very moving ensemble performance from a real family.
It's about a community theater and it's a bunch of actors who are really convincing there. So yeah.
And they're from community theater.
Exactly.
I thought she was going to say Steppenwolf and she's like, I'm from this little theater in Chicago. But yeah, the fact that it's also a family, I mean,
you can't beat it.
Can't beat that.
Then we got stress positions, because you are just so locked in with these characters and how they build off of each other and during how COVID. They fall apart with each other during COVID, and kind of getting to the point where they're a little bit sick of what's going on and mm-hmm. in New York. So that one felt very strong. Then we've got exhibiting forgiveness, which is what Art's been championing the entire time. Yeah. We got multi-generational, really kind of like strong performances there with an ensemble cast.
He's almost like ensembling with himself, considering he gets to talk his art to his younger self.
Which is great. Then we had to mention, this is where we kind of had our back and forth a little bit. I will explain why I went with the number one. I think we did decide on a tie between the temples and it's What's Inside.
Yeah.
Between the Temples is just great. Like, everybody who's in this is firing on all cylinders. It's all kind of really, I would say you got Jason Schwartzman and then you got her right underneath, mm-hmm. but like barely.
Yeah, kind of co-leads, maybe Jason Schwartzman a little bit more.
He gets a bit more of the nod just because he's the one you're following the most. But then it's all of these supporting characters from the moms, from like Dolly DeLeon, and I can't remember the other woman's name, but she was fantastic. Yeah,
for the time of my head, I can't remember her name, but she's
great. Yeah, we'll pop
her. Carol Kane?
Not Carol Kane.
The other woman.
The other mom.
She's Carolyn so nice.
Carolyn Aaron?
I think that is her.
Yeah. But then you've got like the
she was in theater camp last year. That's so funny.
The rabbi?
The rabbi. Yeah. Thank you. The rabbi.
You keep telling me?
Robert Smigel, who is also the voice and arm of Triumph the Insult Comic Code.
They answer so many freaking questions.
Him and then his daughter are really great and build into it. But I made the argument that It's What's Inside is actually the best ensemble cast movie because that lives and dies by its ensemble cast. There, you can't pull people out of that movie and have it not work. You can pull people out of Between the Temples and it's still going to be the same movie. You could have Jason Schwartzman against one other person and it would still be that. You could still make it that movie in a lot of different ways. It's What's Inside. You need great performances from everyone across the board. And that's what we get.
I think if you put The Briefcase in Jason Schwartzman, I think you have a knockout movie in Vinerson.
Yeah, there you go. But I'm just saying, I make the argument that it's an ensemble movie.
It's What's Inside is a true ensemble in the sense that they're like maybe there are actors who have a little more screen time than others, but it doesn't really feel like there are leads
in the same way that
Between the Temples does.
Yeah, there's like a character that you could argue that you're focusing on a little bit more, and then maybe like a secondary character that's directly related to that one, but it's still such a full ensemble.
That
and
other
you
people
need
are
it.
Getting revelations because exactly. the main character doesn't get the revelation for the audience that happens for somebody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'd maybe argue it. A little bit for Between the Temples just in the sense that it's one of those films where like somebody shows up and you would immediately know what their character is.
That's fair.
And even if they aren't necessarily like more than one scene, that one scene communicates so much about the dynamics and the situation and the place. So
I can feel that.
And I would argue for Exhibiting Forgiveness because it exhibits
forgiveness.
Everybody forgiving in the best way possible. Yeah. But
lots of strong categories.
It's good.
Yeah. Lots of outings. Yeah.
And we're still not even getting to our best performances, but a really quick one here in terms of editing. Just going down the list, we had talked about how Dee Dee really puts us into that time period. And then I was finding out in my research, they got the editors of Missing. So the way Searching changed the game, they had that going here for Dee Dee in the early 2000s. Carla Gutierrez for Frida used to be the editor for two of the best documentarians out there. She is now leveled up to be the director of this movie and still got that editing award because she kills it. She brings Frida's paintings to life and the editing is absolutely fantastic. I'm a nerd, so I had to double it up with number three being another doc. Please catch Soundtrack to A Coup d'Etat, bro. It's going to be right there. It's going to be fantastic. But then our top two are narratives. We're going with Sophie Marshall's editing for I Saw the TV Glow. When you watch this a second time and you start paying attention to the aspect ratios and when the songs come in, it's just a full story going on there. I don't know if there were edits that stood out to y'all for I Saw the TV Glow, but I thought that the way that movie is put together is speaking volumes, how they match cut, what they cut to, when they mute.
Yeah.
It's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, that's so much of why we also gave it the cinematography, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the editing. Everything on that movie is really firing on all cylinders for a vision.
I'd probably argue as that number two spot being number one.
That's fair.
Damn, did Amanda come in going, you have to understand the director of It's What's Inside also did the editing. And I would argue...
I don't even think I made that argument for this one. You did that all by yourself.
In this movie is better than the cinematography.
I would agree.
The way that they're able to cut into social media, especially when they're like googly-eyed over Instagram and how people spend that time on their phone, they knocked it out of the park. And that seemed to be like the secondary thing that he had going. If he wanted to make a Black Mirror episode, he'd knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
Just him as his own crew.
Yeah, they're able to communicate a lot about the characters specifically through some of those choices, through how they juxtapose certain things. So yeah, the editing goes a long, long way and it's What's Inside.
Now we move out of our special jury prizes to three more categories before our second round of trivia, which is still really close, but we're splitting this three ways between our best documentaries, what are the best in the U.S., the world, and premiere. Zach?
I'll take over the U.S. section first. Do you want to mention Porcelain War, which is a really interesting film about Ukrainian artists who then end up joining the fighting efforts in the war, and just a really great depiction of like what it's like for the people who have chosen to stay, have chosen to try and fight for their lifestyle and their country. And I don't know, I think does a really incredible job of balancing both the humanity and the you know, just fraught nature of the conflict, without doing it in a way that's necessarily like too downtrodden, because it is also a celebration of the culture that these people have. Yeah. As We Speak, which was your choice for the best documentary from U.S., the U.S. category, this is from J.M. Harper,
yes.
I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he follows Kemba as Kemba talks to other people within hip-hop and also scholars of hip-hop and stuff like that about the trend of rap lyrics being used in legal proceedings, in courts, in trials and stuff like that. And I think it's a just fascinating dive into not just the culture that rap emerges from, but also just the strange position that these people are being in, where their art is being criticized in a way that has real world ramifications. Yeah. So I know you responded also to the globetrotting nature of the film too. So
very good.
A lot to really appreciate about As We Speak. For me though, I agree with the Sundance jury. My favorite film from the U.S. section of the documentary is Daughters, a incredible documentary about a daddy daughter dance that happens in a prison, and just the various lives of these family members who have been pulled apart and are given this brief opportunity for a semblance of normalcy. I think it handles the film so empathetically and with such a caring hand. It's really, really incredible and very emotional. So I got Daughters. Amanda, why don't you tell us about the world category?
Okay, so for the world category, we put Eternal You, which is kind of this horrific, if you really think about it, on the surface level, it sounds nice. It's basically using AI to preserve the memories of your loved ones who have passed, whether it be someone older or your child. But that's kind of a really unhealthy thing to do.
It's like a long funeral.
It's really a long funeral. You never fully get to grieve the death. And it's probably really easy to delude yourself into thinking that what you're interacting with is real when it's not. And I know that so many of the people that are making it, and you even kind of saw it in the doc, they don't care. They're not actually trying to preserve memories. They're trying to find a way to make money. And what's like a great way to find money in subscriptions? Grief. Things that people will literally be like, if you had to stop the subscription, it would feel like a second death.
Mm-hmm.
And
right? Yeah, nasty.
And you wouldn't want to let yourself do that. There's one thing if your loved one dies. It's another one if you feel responsible for the last piece of them dying. It's very, very interesting, but also quite concerning. For larger implications going forward. But then we get Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat. I didn't actually see this one, so I don't know if someone else wants to...
I marked this one over here. This one ended up taking a special jury as well. It is probably the longest movie at the Festival of Wapi, 150 minutes. But it is pretty much telling you how a bunch of black artists back in the 1960s were pretty much like duped or used to be a part of this big political movement, especially dealing with Africa. And the way that it's edited is insane. There's so much information being thrown at you. It is a standard documentary in that sense, not just for its story, but in the way that it's told. So if you have the time for an 150-minute doc, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat is really crazy to figure out how the culture, music, was used in political ways without a problem back in the day. But then that number one.
The number one was one of my favorite movies of the festival, actually, in Black Box Diaries, which is a very moving and very hard to watch at times documentary about a woman who has literally been documenting the process of trying to seek justice for her sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Take that to the furthest level that YouTube's not a fan of us saying. And the way that she starts with the receipts. She has evidence. She has proof of what happened to her. And the way that just because of the person who did it to her is kind of connected, no one wants to listen. We're talking the Japanese police. We're talking like higher political agencies. Everybody is trying to convince this woman that nothing happened to her. And that is terrible. So not only is she documenting this as she goes, kind of live streaming the process, not live streaming, blogging the process and vlogging, she's kind of building her own legal defense around it all too. And it's just this process of trying to find the people that are willing to corroborate the story, stand up for her, help her, who's willing to be on the record and who's not willing to be on the record. And it really kind of also bleeds into that bigger idea of Japanese culture and how they deal with things, and how you could have proof and somebody can still say, why are you standing up and talking about this? You want attention. Why are you making attention out of this? And while it is ultimately quite funny, because so much of her, not quite funny, but her personality comes through a lot in like more lighthearted moments, and it is triumphant overall, you do still kind of have to realize that, like, even if she wins, there's just the, like, nothing changes what happened, but she does take the best outcome out of it, and it does end up feeling very hopeful by the end and triumphant that she managed to make it through the other side, and makes it so that it's like, it would be so easy to say this wasn't even worth it. You don't feel like that by the end. It is worth it. It's worth with the struggle that she put up.
I think it's all good. Just heard a little glitch there, but that would be the U.S. premieres, world premieres. I have premieres. They have a whole other category for this, so I'll do these quickly over here. Devo, it was the story of the band where that started off, I didn't realize, as D-Evolution, and eventually became Devo, and they whipped up some pretty good songs. It's composed by the guy who's in the band, and it was actually really surprising to learn about this band that I knew nothing about, that actually started with some serious roots. So if you'd know nothing about Devo, watch Devo and you might know a little bit. I thought that was pretty good. Zach really liked Girl State because he was very excited coming off of Boy State, which I still think is a little bit of the better one. But even in the differences that we have for this movie that's covering now the Girl State version of these, what'd you call it, summer camps, where they're kind of teaching you how to do the government, this is kind of showcasing what Girl State lacks. And while that is a good take to have, it just sadly pales in comparison to what you got to see the boys do. So I think that's my split there. But I would still say that out of the documentaries that were out there, you got to shout out the cast. The girls were watching more movies than we were in those lines.
They're crushing it.
And number one, Will and Harper. You can see where Zach lives in this movie. It's got what we consider one of the best songs, and truly is like the best friendship movie about two of the biggest creatives that we've had around for a while. So Devo, Girl State, Will and Harper.
I got Porcelain War, As We Speak, and Daughters.
And I had Eternal You, soundtrack to a coup d'etat, and Black Box Diaries.
Those are all the documentaries that I expect everyone to have seen before next year's Sundance Selections, where we also were able to guess a couple from this year when it came to the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Oscars shortlist, there was stuff like The Eternal Memory, stuff like A Still Small Voice that debuted here and made it all the way there. Did any of the actual nominees, I'm forgetting right now if any of the actual nominees debuted here. I thought they did. I'm just forgetting off the top of my head.
Uh-huh. Or should have. Moving on to screenplays, we have our top five screenplays. I saw some people asking about this, if the winner from Sundance should have been the winner. Well, let me tell you. That at number five, we have D.D. by Sean Wong, a story that obviously feels very personal, but was told in such a great way because of its period piece, and definitely deserves a spot right here at number five. We also have From a Different Man, Aaron Schimberg wrote it and directed the movie, and I thought did a fantastic job. I just love his sign-off, which is, I made one good movie, I made another one that didn't do well, but the critics kind of liked it, and I think I finally have something to say here. And the themes in the movie are very apparent in the script. Our top three, though, go to Titus Kaphar. Again, Exhibiting Forgiveness is a powerful film. I thought he put his heart and soul into it. And if you wanted to see something tiny from him, check out his short film that he worked on, because it's kind of like a precursor to what this movie is about, Shut Up and Paint. Fantastic, fantastic script. But then our top two, I'll mention it, y'all talk about it. Jane, yet again, coming up in the top two for their script for I Saw a TV Globe.
Yeah, so Jane Schoenbrunn, I think, and that's probably not fully, but so. Close enough. Yeah, the screenplay for this is just so poignant in so many ways. Like, when you watch it's very clear that it is relating to their personal experience and their kind of personal journey in terms of gender identity. But it can also be applied to a lot of other things as well, whether it's just your sexuality or anything else that you feel like you have to hide about yourself and not live your authentic life. So I do think it's really going to connect with the people that it needs to based on that script. And I think so much of what you end up seeing on screen had to start on the paper. Yeah. For how tight it is, for how effectively it all comes together, I do think it really has to start with the screenplay, and they knocked it out of the park.
And we kind of have them swapped here. We have Jane at number two, but they'll be number one very soon. Well, number one here had to go to the one and only Jesse Eisenberg. Zach, talk about why this is easily the best script of the fest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just such an empathetic version of this story, one that has space and heart for all of its characters from all their different situations. And it, there's no characters here who kind of exist simply to be a foil or to be mocked or anything like that. It really is interested in everybody's story in a really open-hearted way. And it's a story that is one that's been impacted by generations, right? By history. And by shared and personal traumas. And I just think, it, you know, to articulate all that is pretty remarkable. And to do it also in a film that isn't dour, that isn't a complete depressing thing, that has lots moments, of humor to it too.
I'm thankful for that. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
So that is our best screenplays of the year. Just some really good stuff. There's a bunch of honorable mentions as well. But we're going to wrap up this section before some trivia with what we've been calling a shorts pause. Alina has gone through all freaking 8 categories of the shorts that are here at Sundance. That's her thing.
She's the hero.
Removed the winners. So she was going through all of the shorts and anything that won got removed and became its own category. She scoped those out, got those as well. There are movies from an Obama. Here, there are movies from big filmmakers. None of those made your list. Tell me what did.
All right, on my top list, I have Bob's Funeral. It is a nonfiction short. It goes through, if you can open up the little tab, yeah. It goes through Jack and his life with his grandfather and his father. I don't know if you remember, I binged all this director's shorts that were on Vimeo.
Oh, you're a big Jack Dunphy?
This one delivered just as well, so perfect. At my top today. The next one, also a doc. I was very surprised. So this one, they say there was an alien that was kind of discovered in a forest. There's a secret that's been kept for 30 years. This director goes and she kind of interviews people from the village, and it's actually a pretty big deal.
Okay.
So that one was very good. Hopefully people can catch that one.
This one won.
So did Bob's Funeral. If you open up the little toggle, I can tell you exactly what they won. So Bob's Funeral, the first one I mentioned at the top, won for the Nonfiction Short Film Jury Award. And then The Masterpiece won for like the whole thing, the grand jury. Like it won the whole thing. And very well so, because it deals with a wealthy couple. They are trying to recycle like an old TV. And then they meet two dudes. They're like, hey, we also have a washer and dryer at home. We have this at home. And then all of a sudden, as they're trying to pack stuff into their van, they're like, hey, what's that you have in your van that might be more valuable than everything we've given you? So that one kind of gets into the nitty gritty of class. The Looming was actually in the Midnight Short category. And this one deals with a guy, Chester, right? Yeah, Chester. He is using like an Alexa, it's called the Luna, and feels like they're like listening to certain things at home and realize that maybe it's their dementia, maybe it's not. Mm. So that one's also in the Midnight category. Masha won for directing. And then my last one is called Bust. It is about a trans cop doing a bust in New York City. So they're all great films. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it for the shorts pause.
And just like we were talking about earlier with Didi, you know, that's a short filmmaker who just got nominated for an Oscar and is now here at Sundance with an incredible feature film. So these are the movies that you're going to want to watch to find out what the next great filmmaker might be.
Mm-hmm. Also a reminder that if you can't. You were saying?
They're not going to get that you're joking, though.
Joking. We can't hear you.
You were saying,
I'm not sure my microphone is picking up as well as yours is.
So if it sounds like that, I think, then just be aware that we are recording this audio always in post-production. We put up the entire thing so it sounds crispy. It sounds clear.
Producer Caitlin always has our back.
Always got us. So if there's any glitches there, hopefully for the most part, you can see everything that's happening, but it's there. Trivia time.
Close your eyes.
You don't have to close your eyes this time. You actually have to hold your breath.
Should I hum the Jeopardy theme?
Hold my breath.
All right, here we go. This is producer trivia. It's going to be very simple. I'm going to name you a producer. You are going to tell me what they have here at the fest. Super simple. Everybody loves producers. There are two options for this first one right here. I need you to tell me the two movies produced by Emma Stone and her husband David.
One is I saw the TV glow, and I'm assuming the other one's going to be a real pain.
This man wasn't even waiting. He said a TV glow and a real pain. Do you by any chance know their company?
Is it something tree?
You're so close.
Tell me.
Fruit tree.
There we go.
Yeah.
What is the movie produced by the one and only Colman Domingo?
That would be It's What's Inside, the big sale of Sundance, $17 million.
Oh, yeah.
And just like dude, that, Zach's on top.
I told you, I don't know. I don't pay attention to producers.
Let's go. Next up, there is one little movie here that people said it sounds like it came from him, but he's like, nah, I'm just a producer here. The boy, Darren Aronofsky made a movie.
Oh, shit.
It's not a different man, is it? I thought it was different man.
No, it's something weird. It's not Presence.
Dang, that's 0 for 2.
I know what it is.
Any producers out in the audience?
No, I know what it is, and I just can't. It's he was there. It's not I saw the TV glow, is it? It's not TV glow.
Ain't nobody got it? Three.
Is it Pony Boy?
Two. One. After naming the entire lineup, no one said A Little Death.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
He was involved in that.
So I told you, I don't know. My brain doesn't do this kind of trivia. I'm a visual person.
Michael Fassbender produced a movie. This is easy.
Kneecap.
I think I got you. I think she got me. Pitcher like... hand right there. He is also in the movie, so that's a pretty easy one right there. Y'all remember Carlos Lopez Estrada? He's done a couple
of movies. I do remember Carlos Lopez Estrada. He had a hand in Didi. He was also a B camera operator.
Whoa!
Yeah.
B camera.
Can I get a check for that?
I do. I do remember hearing when we noticed it.
All right. If I'm not mistaken, my score should go 4-3.
Really? You didn't do the one Margot Robbie?
I'll cut to it. What did Margot Robbie produce?
Wasn't it My Old Ass? Wasn't that production?
I would have laughed if you freaking got that one wrong after
really
asking
funny,
for it.
Right? I was like, wasn't it My Old Ass?
Margot Robbie is become like a go-to producer. I mean, just looking at this. Barbie, You Loved Saltburn.
Yeah.
I, Tanya from a couple years ago. Promising Young Woman from
Promising
Sundance.
Promising Young Woman.
And I believe she's talked about doing less acting so she can do more producing.
After getting snubbed?
Yeah. I mean, look, she didn't get snubbed as a producer.
No, she did not get snubbed as a producer.
So there you go.
Yeah.
She did do My Old Ass. That is her big pickup of the fest, or technically brought it in. So that's another one.
Lucky chap,
Amanda,
I think. Oh, you don't have to give that to me. I suggested that one.
Oh, it was next.
Sorry, Zach.
Producer Derek Cianfrance was here. And if y'all were paying attention earlier.
Yeah. Shoot, this might have just left my mind. Because we were just watching it,
just
too.
Just set it in the top 10, too. I told them there would be a pop quiz. They didn't even listen to me.
Yeah, no, I did listen. Is it Exhibiting Forgiveness?
By default, you got that one. Exhibiting Forgiveness, one of my favorites from the fest, comes from one of the best directors who doesn't do anything. Like, what was his last movie, dude?
Cianfrance, he did that Mark Ruffalo show where he was...
That's a show.
Right.
That's...
Yeah.
He made an incredible movie here as producer, so I'm very happy for
his
that.
His last movie, I believe, was A Light Between Worlds, or whatever that Lighthouse one was.
With Fassbender
and Vikander.
Okay. She is up by one right now, Zach, but it's still anyone's game by the end of this category here. What did Ari Aster produce?
You already asked that.
Then
Little
you should
Death?
Know the answer. Clearly didn't say it.
A Different Man.
Ari Aster produced one movie.
TV Glow.
Nope.
It's What's Inside.
Do, 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 do.
I'll just throw Presence out there, even though I don't think it's Presence.
He likes showing penises in his movies.
Sebastian.
Oh, yeah. He did Sasquatch Sunset.
Sasquatch Sunset.
There you go.
Oh, my God. I did know that one.
He obviously worked with the Zellners. He's done some good stuff.
I'm going to be honest. You said Ari Aster. My brain was like, we already did Aronofsky.
I told you. Antoine Fuqua produced what movie that y'all saw today?
Was he on
Girls Will Be Girls?
No, I think he was on The Summers, right?
Damn, very close. No,
what did we watch today?
It is a premier feature film. Actually, I think you guys saw it yesterday. My bad. I thought it was today. Y'all saw this at some point in time.
Oh, was it Rob Peace?
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that was yesterday.
The big name to help you for what we consider it's probably going to be a big biopic, considering it comes from a book and everything.
Yeah,
I love this one, Amanda. I hope you get it, but Zach, you better get it. Too Short the Rapper produced what?
Oh my God, Too Short the Rapper produced Freaky Tales.
How do you know this?
Because Too Short's in Freaky Tales. It's about Too Short.
Oh, I know. I was very surprised when I found that out.
Well, part of it's about Too Short.
All right, if my calculations are correct, you guys are tied 6.
Nice.
Sixes.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. I got two left right here. Don't get it twisted, y'all.
Okay.
When are you guys going to lose?
Okay.
I don't like this category.
There is a documentary that was produced by Jamie Foxx and Colin Firth.
Documentary Colin Firth.
Foxx.
Coup d'etat?
And Colin Firth. That's a good guess. It's not the guess here.
It's the greatest night in pop.
That sounds more like it, right?
Right.
It is a song.
The song one. Oh my God, this sucks because you're going to get it now. It's the rap one, a voice.
As We Speak.
As We Speak.
Is not the answer.
Okay, cool. Good. I'd feel really embarrassed.
Just give it to us.
Luther, Never Too Much.
Oh,
they are both Talking Heads in it as well. Okay. And they do a good little tribute to him. Final one, see if we leave. Tied at sixes in one go. I was surprised to see this producer on this movie. Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton.
Whoever guesses this earns it.
A Different Man?
Zach?
It's not that. It's something that doesn't, it doesn't really match the Joel Edgerton vibe.
Is it TV Glow? No?
It's on the screen for people. Not for you. Don't look. It is a documentary.
Oh, it's a doc. Okay.
I was going to say like Moo Guy or something until you said documentary.
Daughters.
Daughters. Okay.
The man came in here and created a masterpiece.
Oh, I like that. Okay, we end with a tie.
We end with a tie right there as we move on to the
biggest
categories.
I was going to say there was way more questions about my brain than me looking at pictures and being able to be like, that's this one.
I told you I wasn't going to have too many pictures because I figured that was probably going to be the most difficult one to have there. But next year, I promise, clips.
There we go.
I might even have some audio in there. Who knows?
If they release clips.
At that point. All right, let's jump into the big stuff right here. We have the lead actors. Let's just get into it. We have 10 top performances of this year. And the first one comes from a little movie called Love Lies Bleeding, where I'm going to let Amanda take it away, why Kristen Stewart as Lou deserves to be on the top spot. And I'm my boy Sebastian.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you are going to let me. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I think that there is so much in that performance that is Kristen Stewart that works so well. Like there's reactions that had the whole crowd just being like, that was such an authentic reaction. I do think it's a really moving performance in a lot of ways. I think she's doing a lot with the performance. I think there's areas that could have been phoned in a little bit more that it wasn't. So I needed her in this category. You know, that's why she's at the bottom. I wasn't going to fight to put her over Kieran Culkin, but like I wanted her in the category.
Hey, it's Groups Picks. We listen here and I figured the bottom.
We do.
The bottom would have worked, you know?
The bottom
I don't think she minds being on that.
I don't think she minds.
At number nine, we have Pony Boy themselves, River Gallo as Pony Boy. They wrote the script of the short, produced that. Now stars wrote and just carried it away in this one. Also from New Jersey, like you were saying, Zach, resonated with you in River's performance when they weren't opposite Dylan O'Brien?
Yeah.
I think they were just very authentic in the role. And I mean, it makes sense given the situation. But like, particularly a film like this one that is trying to be a bit more gritty, trying to be a bit more street level. I think if you don't believe that these characters have gone through these experiences or can actually speak to these types of experiences, then it just the whole movie falls apart. And they're surrounded by stars we know and love, but they were the thing I think that leapt out of the film the most, which is also a testament to just doing a great job in the role.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, another one that completely embodied it, but
yeah,
we knew he was going to as the character of Terry Goon, Jacob Early in Stress Positions. I keep saying
John.
Is. What did I say?
Jacob.
John Early in...
John Jacob.
Jingle John Smith.
Yeah.
He was a cartoon character in this. He was a Looney Tune
so
going through. Zach argued for him in terms of makeup because he is sweating every single time. He's walking
crooked.
It's
the physicality.
Yeah.
It's the physicality, absolutely. Yeah. Because he's got like a back injury or like a knee issue and he's so overwhelmed. And I think it does a great job of both... sort of trying to elicit sympathy but not being worthy of a lot of sympathy.
Like, really the observation is how pathetic of a man
can
truly. Someone be. This next one right here coming in at 10987 comes from the movie In the Summers. It's the character of Vicente played by Residente.
How did Residente get back that high up the list when Residente was knocked off the list at one
point?
I think
the awards might be rigged.
I knocked them out. Y'all didn't give me any, but I said Sasquatch. Y'all said they're just in suits.
Yeah, no, but we had Residente off the list. So
I
how
said
did he get
10,
back 9, in
8, 7? 7, 6, 5. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she should not be in there. Residente, I'm sorry. I try. They stopped the count on me. Shout out, Residente.
Tried to make 11 into 10, huh?
Yeah.
I tried doing magic. He got four sequences out of his movie.
He was good, though. He was good, though.
June Squibb.
Yes.
For Thelma. The one and only star of her movie in her mid-90s.
94.
Oh, whoa.
Mid-90s. First performance she's ever been in. She's EP, doing all of her own stunts. Stand-up performance.
Oh.
Favorite stunt?
Favorite what?
Stunt?
I'm flipping over the mattress, which we talked about. She looks clean.
It's good.
With walking away from the explosion. It's very Liam Neeson.
Next up, Jesse Eisenberg in our number six, true, six spot for acting as David in A Real Pain. Again, I'm arguing for his Sasquatch role, but
I just think it's a role that uses the things that Jesse Eisenberg has become known for, that sort of like tightly wound nature, but doing it in a way that deepens your understanding of the character and really just, I don't know, feels really real. Like it's not just that he's tightly wound. He has his moments where he's able to kind of like let his shoulders drop. But I found him to be incredibly believable and incredibly emotional in the film.
Kind of a version of himself.
But that's, yeah.
Sure, but it's more than that.
Yeah.
It is more than that. Yeah.
For A Different Man, we have Sebastian Stan in the role of Edward.
Which, yeah, he is so convincing we didn't realize it was him for about half an hour.
Yeah.
I literally thought that they had gotten Adam to do the part, somehow magically got rid of his accent, and then we find out, or something.
Dubbed it, yeah.
So this man is acting through all of those prosthetics, and I think this is a role where you really see it in the eyes for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So Sebastian Stan there in our number five spot.
No, I was just going to say, it's another one of those roles where sometimes you see actors who are like, oh, how it's so hard to act under all the makeup. But like, if you know what you're doing, you can do it.
He also does have a physical, where he walks a lot like this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Until he starts getting his charisma. But yeah,
that was the other thing too, because I was like, he's taller now, but it's because he wasn't doing this anymore, you know?
Speaking of the schlumps out there, Jason freaking Schwartzman as Ben in Between the Temples. I mean, the man's got it all. He had a fantastic year last year.
He's on an incredible run.
He's on a run through and through, and I think he gives a really good performance here. Also really helped and complimented by its cinematography, who I know is a now turned director who you really enjoy.
Sean Price Williams, absolutely. Shot in 16mm. It's beautifully done.
Just to capture like these little moments in these very tight places, I think that really helps out.
Yeah. I wanted to bring it up for editing and cinematography. I just feel like I didn't feel like I would have a lot of support.
You gotta argue for it, but then, hey, there it is.
There it is. Right now there. You got it. Now you know.
Now you got it. In.
Yeah.
We got our top three right here. For I Saw the TV Glow, the character of Owen played by Justice Smith.
It's so good. Again, that's another one. There's a physicality to the role, just the way he's talking that's all like kind of withdrawn on himself, that he almost doesn't have the confidence to say words out loud properly.
The performance reminded me a lot of Joaquin Phoenix and Beau in Is Afraid, because they both, in certain respects, feel like hollowed out shells of humans.
Yes. There's actually a line that like kind of alludes to that feeling that way,
exactly.
Which is a very poignant line, and it's kind of delivered in such a casual way that it's kind of scary, but like... Yeah. It hits. Like, so much of this movie hits, and so much of that is because of how Owen is playing the role.
Justice.
Justice is playing the role of Owen. Same person, you know, but it's just really, really, really incredible performance there that carries so much of the movie, as you're kind of locked in with him the entire time.
Had another movie where the interviews weren't great and almost gave a America Ferrera Barbie speech, but he was great in this one, especially that party scene. Top two. I'm going all in at number two. Excuse me. Andre Holland as the character of Terrell in Exhibiting Forgiveness is a powerful performance that really has him going through just, I don't even know how much history for the man. Being able to play not only among some greats in the supportings for who plays his parents, but even interacting with his younger self through his art. Andre Holland as Terrell, one of the best performances of the festival. Yeah.
One of those dudes who brings so much pathos to pretty much any role that he inhabits. But this one in particular, you really need to have that dramatic heft to bring in that sense that this is a person with history, a person who's carrying different traumas into this moment that we're watching. And he's incredible in the film.
So our number two goes to Andre Holland. And somehow this little bugger, this little rat, just won our hearts again. Kieran Culkin as Benji in A Real Pain. Stole it. Just stole it. Got
another,
the Emmy.
Another classic, screw you, Pedro.
Honestly, it's just him, honestly, in all the roles that he's in. He's wearing all of the what's it called, the wristbands that he wears and everything else. But yet he's able to just maneuver being serious and then just finding these like almost nonchalant moments. There's no way that they wrote it, but then it almost like leads to another point where it's just like, how did he do it so fluidly to interact with these characters that leads to the next plot point? And then you hear how they worked on it and how he was just impromptu. It was all impromptu for him when he appeared filming on location and all this. I can't imagine the stress on Jesse. I think he almost stressed Jesse out the way that the cousin would have stressed him out.
Yeah, there's some better quality to that for sure. But Culkin is so good. He's so loose and mercurial, and it's got a bit of that Roman Roy energy, but it has more heart to it too. It's an incredible performance. He's so, so watchable.
So our number one performance of this year, Kieran Culkin on a full run.
Easy pick.
All right, we're down to our final two categories. Zach, take it away with the best directors.
Let's run through them. Number five on our list, I know you wanted to give that shout out to Titus Kaphar, the feature directorial debut. And Exhibiting Forgiveness. I mean, it's a really thoughtfully made film for sure. Above them, we got Nathan Zellner and David Zellner, the brothers who brought us Sasquatch Sunset. It is such a peculiar film and such a unique endeavor that I feel like it's worth giving them this slot in director, because there's like so little to emulate to have made this, right? Like,
absolutely.
So much of it has to just originate from your brain, and that they were able to pull off a feature length version of whatever this is is an achievement all of its own.
Truly.
So, we got Sean Wong, the other feature directorial debut we're celebrating. Dee Dee, an incredible coming of age story that just is firmly planted in 2008 in a way that just like brought all of these memories rushing up. It's so well done, but also just really captures the awkwardness and conflicted nature of going through the coming of age.
Future Oscar winner, baby. Let's go.
Let's go.
We did want to give another shout out to Jesse Eisenberg for A Real Pain, because it is one of the best films that we saw here, and I think he does such an incredible job of handling it all. But we gave him the screenwriting category. We're giving someone else the director category.
Rightfully so.
Jane Schoenbrunn for I Saw the TV Glow. Just such a complete thought in a lot of ways. Such a dense text. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those films that you see and you can't help but reckon with the vision. Like, it's such a clear voice coming through.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's no denying that. So that's why we have to give it the nod to director, in my opinion, because it is just the direction that keeps it all together so effectively. And so exciting to have caught it here.
Those are our best directors. And now we wrap it up with Intercut's best Sundance movie. We appreciate everyone who's in the chat. We saw Celluloid. Somebody was talking about being their favorite, hoping to get distributor. Wiley, shout out Wiley, talking about how they love Kneecap and Thelma. Jose talking about Sujo. Just a lot of really good picks out there. So let's talk about what our top five are. I'm going to give the three. We'll go two, and Amanda names one. Amanda should probably mention this one. It's What's Inside, making our top five of the festival. If there's a movie that's going to come out and do a big splash, it's going to be this one, and you are guaranteed to get it because it's going to be playing on Netflix. It's going to kill on Netflix.
Which is depressing.
But y'all need to see it in theaters.
If they market it well. Look at all the stuff that they spend a bunch of money on that they don't market.
This should be this year's Talk to Me, and hopefully y'all do your part and go out and see it.
Go see it. Well, sit at home and see it.
Or stay at home and see it.
Stay at home and see it.
And number four, it's coming from A24 and probably is the movie of the fest. Everyone was out here in line in the wait list. It was selling out like crazy. I Saw the TV Glow. Y'all were mentioning that this is going to be the movie that defines this year, as it's Donnie Darko, as the one that people are like, this is the one that did something different. We got something new from here, and it's going to influence so many other filmmakers to come.
These are reverse alphabetical order, we should point out, because our number one is not our number one favorite of the
best.
Aren't doing this in alphabetical.
Reverse alphabetical now.
Okay. That makes so much more sense then.
I was going to say, I should have. All right. Whoopsie.
I will take... I'm just going to continue with that. Dee Dee is another one in reverse alphabetical order that we think also really spoke for the festival in terms of it being in the U.S. competition, the way that it was able to reflect back on the early 2000s. A lot of movies in the 90s and 2000s, Dee Dee did it beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the films that we've selected here, something like I Saw the TV Glow is coming from Jane Schoenbrunn, who's previously been at Sundance. It's What's Inside is like this exciting horror debut. But I think the thing that Sundance is perhaps best known for are these filmmakers who are making very personal films as their debut, and that being like a launching point. And to me, even if it isn't necessarily the number one film of Sundance, this is like the Sundance movie of 2024. It's
That's either this or I saw the TV Globe.
Yep. It's either that or what you're saying next, which is?
A Real Pain, coming from Jesse Eisenberg, which we keep talking about because it's worthy in so many categories.
Award winner, just so you know.
Exactly. I mean, we all really love the film. You'll hear more. You can hear more about it in our review or when we publish that top 10 of Sundance video. And yeah, I mean, it's an incredible film. Personally, like, the only reason why I would maybe not have gone with it in the U.S. dramatic category is because it is Jesse Eisenberg who comes in having made a film, having the connections, being friends with Emma Stone. Like,
for sure,
A Real Pain is a little bit different than Didi, even if I maybe ended up at the end of the day liked A Real Pain more, and I'm glad we have it in our top five here. But first alphabetically,
I will just say A Real Pain. I know you see somebody like Jesse Eisenberg and you want to say they only got it because of who they are. No, we've seen movies like that come out in the last little bit. Pool Man is that movie. Don't watch it. This was a really good movie and it deserves to exist and it deserves what it got.
Yeah,
it deserves to be here at this festival. But in our first alphabetical of the fest, we decided to go with A Different Man because it did kind of wrap up so many of our categories as we were going. It got mentioned a lot. There is a lot going for this movie. It has a lot of strengths and I think it's really smart. I saw some comments saying that there was nothing really going on underneath the surface. There cannot be anything further from the truth.
Keep that shit on TikTok.
Literally, there is something going on beneath the surface.
It's like going into a cemetery saying there's nothing underground.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there's like physically and literally and, you know, metaphorically, there is so much going on underneath. So it is a really strong movie. It's really smart. It's also very funny with how it handles it when it kind of amps up, I guess, when it amps up in certain areas towards the end. So, yeah.
It is the most A24, neon A24 movie that there is out there. So going in order, because of course I did it, you know, to reverse facilitate it. We had, in no particular order, our top five biggest movies out of Sundance, A Different Man, A Real Pain, Didi, Zach?
I Saw the TV Glow.
It's What's Inside.
There we go.
All of the movies and all of the categories and still a top 10 and then still a whole recap. So many more stuff dealing with the Sundance Film Festival to still talk with you guys. But we have a screening to catch right now. So after covering all of these categories, you can catch more from me over at LME Movies on Twitter, on Facebook, all that good stuff. Or every week here on the Intercut Podcast, where you can also find...
at Zshevich, or I also do stuff at Multiplex Show. And occasionally we're joined by...
Amanda the Jedi, which is where you can find me on all sorts of social medias. Amanda the Jedi.
You can find us every week here on the Intercut Podcast, where we talk movies, all this Sundance stuff, all that good things. You know, just hit us up on social media. Hit us up down below. But before we go, it's a tie. I need to know... guys, what's the number one movie in the 40 years of Sundance? Go.
It was Whiplash.
Thank you so
as
much.
As voted in by critics. But it should be Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
As voted in by me. I have Whiplash. It right here. It is real.
It's my number one.
It is solidified. Number one.
Number
Whiplash,
one.
Whiplash, baby. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. There you
go. So for to another 40 years, we'll see you then.
Woo!
Take care.